Hello and welcome to the Her Sport Six Nations show brought to you by Opal, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. My name is Jessica Woodlock and I'm joined by Hannah Tyrrell to bring you all the latest news, insights and a few laughs on the way as we build up to the weekend's action. Hannah, last weekend we knew it was going to be a tough game. The final result then saw 50 points be put on us. We saw Captain Nicola Friday get quite emotional after the game. What did you make of it?
Yeah, look, obviously we knew going into that game it was going to be tough, it was going to be a step up from the Wales match, and that, you know, France didn't have a very good first round performance, so they'd be coming out all guns blazing, and, you know, the scoreline obviously isn't great for Irish rugby, but, you know, I've no doubt that those Irish girls, they put their head down and they went to work for 80 minutes and gave everything they could, and they were the second best team on the day, and, you know, there was an improved performance from the Wales game. There was a couple of things they corrected and they got right, but the French team, their depth, you know, their dominance was clear to see, and, you know, we take nothing away from them. They were very, very good the weekend.
And we saw France obviously get a red card after a high tackle. Do you think if they had remained with 15 players, we would have seen, you know, a bigger gap between that scoreline?
Yeah, look, I don't know. There's no way to say on that. Regarding the red card, it was very deserved. World Rugby have been very clear on their on head contact and high tackles and trying to improve the safety of the game. And, you know, the French prop, Deshaï, she had no mitigating factors. She went high on Derv. It was clear, you know, shoulder-to-head connection. There was an awful lot of force. She was a much bigger player than Nick Avard. And, you know, when Holly Davidson, the ref, had a look at it, she couldn't take any mitigations into account, and it was a deserved red card. It happened very early on in the game, and I really thought that might spur Ireland on, who had had a couple of decent, you know, runs, I suppose, or spells of possession, and had an encouraging start. But it actually went in favour of France, and they nearly started to improve their general phase of play and kind of got on top of Ireland a little bit, and the red card nearly made France better, which is hard to come by, but that can sometimes energise a team as they have to come together and really try and work with that 14-man game. And again, just their skills and their depth and their world-class players they had proved too much for us.
And we saw a lot of changes compared to the team against Wales. We saw Dana O'Brien start, Grace Moore, Dervla Nic Avard as well. What did you make of those changes? Quite a lot of them from round one that we would have seen.
Yeah, look, a couple of changes there were forced and necessary. Unfortunately, we talked about Enya Breen last week potentially being injured. Turns out she's had a very significant knee injury and will be out for the rest of the campaign. So Vicky Irwin came in at 12. Not her usual position. She came on a fullback last week and probably plays more in kind of 13 or back three for Sale Sharks over in England. But she stepped in there, had a tough day at the office, but, you know, it was an opportunity for her, I suppose, to show what she can do. And she did a lot of stuff. She did a lot of good runs and a lot of heavy carries. Ireland didn't get a lot out of their possession. Look, in terms of Dana O'Brien, while she was selected to start, anyway, she would have started the game because Nicole Cronin was ruled out of the squad last minute. And I thought she had some really good, you know, parts to her game. Her boot came in handy a lot of times for clearing the pressure that we were under, and I spoke about that before. She kicked her only points of the game with the penalty after that red card. She had a couple of, I suppose, I don't want to say mistakes because they weren't mistakes. She got blocked down a couple of times and one of them led to a French try. They're not a mistake. It's just maybe we either took a little bit too long with clearing it or didn't get our angles or our depth right in that. And that's all for a young 19-year-old at 10, you know, playing against one of the top three teams in the world. That's just a learning curve for her. And what we really need to see now, not just from her, but from this whole Irish team, is how do we pick ourselves up from these little mistakes and from these performances going into the French match. We saw a change for Derv Nic Avard in the back row. Thought she was electric when she came on last week. Her carries, her metres made, you know, defenders beaten. And she really just gets stuck in and is a great player. And we saw her at 8, which is a surprise. You know, she's played there for Munster and for Old Belvedere, but a lot of people thought maybe 8 wasn't her best position. Again, I thought she did really well, you know, on a tough day for an Ireland pack that was going backwards all the time against a much bigger and physically dominant French team, but stood up well and deserved that start. And you know, she should start again the next match. And one of the other changes we saw was Grace Moore coming in at 7, thought she played really well, thought she was very physical, some really nice handoffs and breaks in the second half. She got a really good timely interception. Other than that though, like, you know, again, our pack was just destroyed a little bit in certain aspects, and we didn't really get to see some of our best players on the front foot like we would like to. Clive McGrath went from starting to the bench with Christy Haney come in. I think that was just a bit more. We need more experience with a tougher French team coming in. And from a technical point of view, Christy Haney would have a really cool, calm head in her. She's a really good leader and she'd be a lot better in the scrum. And that's where Clive McGrath just needs to have a learning curve and a learning experience and learn from these players around her. She came on and got minutes, which will stand to her in the long run.
And you mentioned that we did actually improve from the Welsh game. On what sort of aspects did we improve? Penalty count, was it, you know, the maul, which really didn't work in our favour against Wales? What sort of aspects did we improve on?
Yeah, so look, obviously when you're looking at kind of quantifiable things, look, we would have liked to put a lot more points on the board, but I did think that we had a lot more positive phases of play and possession. You know, particularly we started the game really well, a couple of half breaks. Molly Scuffin-McCabe had a really nice dart from 9, just keeping France's defence a little bit honest. But just our general kind of phase play, holding onto the ball a little bit better. Our contacts got a little bit better. We were winning the game line a little bit more. Again, our maul defence improved. Wasn't perfect, but there were times where, you know, the French maul seemed to be on a roll, and then the Irish maul D really helped and kind of stopped them a little bit. Unfortunately, we couldn't keep them out long enough, and you know, the French scored in different ways a couple of phases later. And in our scrum, we shored up our scrum a little bit better again. Christy Haney coming in would have made a big difference to that. And we actually got a couple of scrum penalties off that French pack in the second half, which was great to see, and gives a lot of boost to this team. And they're the kind of positives they want to take into next week.
And Nicola Friday, obviously emotional after the game. They knew at the end of the day, heading in, they were against someone who had come second in the Six Nations year on year. What do you think she will be saying to the team after that match and this week?
Yeah, look, obviously for Nick, she wants to be, she's the leader of this team, and she wants their team to be playing well. And she knows the effort that her team are putting in, that there's no denying that. You know, this is a really tough period for this team. You know, they're in a transition phase, a lot of new faces, a lot of learnings, you know, and big changes don't happen overnight. You know, we're not going to see massive improvements from this team, you know, from one game to the next. And all we're hoping for is that they learn a little bit inch by inch, and we see small changes and improvements as these games go on. And she was clearly upset and emotional because she knows how much her team have worked on this and how hard they've worked. And, you know, it can be hard to put your body out there in the line for 80 minutes and then come away with a result like that. And you know, as leader of her team, you could tell how much it meant to her and how much she cared about this. And I suppose we know, like, the media are going to scrutinize that result, and particularly with the men's team doing well and stuff. But we need to give these players time. We need to look at it from a perspective of the RFU having given this team enough of a backing so far. And we've seen that changes now with professionalism and stuff like that, but that doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's going to take a lot of time for this to embed and for these guys to set down what kind of a team they are and how they're going to play, and players getting up to scratch and stuff like that. And they're doing the best they can, and it's just unfortunate with the standard we're not there yet. But I do believe it will come, and we just need to keep at it.
So on to rugby sevens. The Ireland women emerged without a win on the final day of the Hong Kong sevens, meaning the battle for Olympic qualification is set to go right down to the wire. It marks the second successive 8th place finish, with the points being just enough to keep them ahead of Fiji. Ireland's lead in the overall standings is now down to just 2 points, meaning it is a 3-horse race for the final automatic Olympic spot. Hannah, a disappointing weekend for the sevens, would you say?
Yeah, look, not the results that Irish team would have wanted, and personally not the result I think that they deserved. Having watched all the games over the weekend, I think they were desperately unlucky in a couple of games. You know, they had a very tricky pool to start off with on day one, and they started their weekend off with a very tricky game against Fiji, their direct basically opposition for that last Olympic qualification place, and they came out on the wrong side of that. They then went up against Australia in the group game, and Australia, one of the best teams in the world right now, current World Series title holders, you know, and they've just been absolutely phenomenal recently. And Ireland came out of that 19-12 in a 1912 defeat, which was really, really tricky. They beat Brazil, thankfully, and that was a massive, massive result for them because it allowed them to sneak in as a best third place finisher into the quarterfinals, which was a huge thing. Because once you get into knockout rugby on day two, you know, anything can happen. Unfortunately, because they were third place finishers, you know, their rankings put them up against Australia on day two. And unfortunately, were just blown out the water a little bit and didn't start the day as well as they could. And look, you're right. They didn't get a win on day two. After playing Australia, they came up against France, who were ahead of them in the rankings as well. And unfortunately, couldn't get a win there. And then for seventh, eighth place, which was massive because the points race at the top is so tight and there's only one tournament left afterwards, which is Toulouse, every ranking and every place was so important. And the Irish team were doing really well against USA, but unfortunately lost out 15-14 in that last game. And, you know, there's only a point in it in that game, but it was the difference of 2 points in the overall World Series table. And it, as you said, Fiji and Great Britain did really well at the weekend. Great Britain coming third and Fiji coming fourth, which meant that the gap between Ireland overall in the series table and Fiji was 10 points and it's now 2 points. Great Britain, it was 14 and it's now 4 points. So there's been a huge turnaround in that. Not the best weekend for Irish rugby, but there's one more tournament in Toulouse left, and basically whoever finishes higher in that tournament between Ireland and Fiji will go to the Olympics. Look, it sounds like it's all doom and gloom, but this Irish team has been playing some phenomenal rugby over the course of the year. They haven't had their best couple of tournaments, but they've a month now to go back and regain themselves, you know, figure out what went wrong and go hell for leather into that Toulouse tournament. And even if they don't qualify for the Olympics automatically off the World Series, which would be ideal, they still have an opportunity in the European Championships in the summer where there's one place outright going to that. And... you know, if Ireland don't qualify through the World Series, it'll be between basically Ireland, Great Britain and Fiji, who'd be the main contenders. Or sorry, Ireland, Great Britain and Spain would be main contenders in that European Championship. And then even from that, runner-up in that European tournament will go to another repechage where they have another chance. So it isn't the end of the world if they don't qualify through the series with Toulouse. They still have two more chances. But I think, based on how well they've played this year, they deserve that spot and they deserve that recognition because they've been so good and they've just had a little bit of an off week and it's just purely come at the wrong time because Fiji have improved massively.
You are watching the Her Sport Six Nations show brought to you in association with Opal, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. So on to the other matches then. We saw quite a close scoreline between Scotland and Wales, 22-34 to Wales. Tupelutu, we saw player of the match again. She also got it against Ireland. What did you make of that match?
Yeah, look, I spoke about this before the game, you know, and Wales were very good against Ireland last week. And, you know, I was wondering whether this be a fluke or not. I thought they'd be too strong for Scotland and I was proved right. But the game was a lot tighter than I expected. But I suppose looking back, there's always been a really big rivalry between Scotland and Wales. But, you know, like, it was a fantastic game to watch. It was really tight at halftime, just 2 points in it. Scotland were just not going away. They were really, really dogged. Wales were very dominant in most aspects of the game, but Scotland just refused to lie down. And, you know, they got a fantastic couple of scores. Like, they stayed in it. Skeldon got a try early on. Chloe Rowley scored another fantastic try after getting a brilliant one against England last week. But Wales are just showing that the benefits of being professional for so long. You know, they're just so cohesive and they're all on the same page. There's some fantastic players in them, but their front row is where they're just absolutely annihilating teams. You know, Tupelutu, 19 years of age, converted from back row, spoke about her last week. Just another phenomenal player. And like, just to think that she has such a huge future ahead of her. And you know, I saw a video about her last week where she was talking off pitch about like how much she loves rugby, and she's actually, for such a big, strong, powerful girl, she's so softly spoken and so humble, and you know, is just a very down to earth girl who just loves playing rugby. And she says she's a very different person on the pitch than she is off it, because on the pitch she's an absolute wrecking ball. And you know, Scotland couldn't live with her last weekend, and she was fantastic in her carries and her tackles. She brought an aggressive edge for Wales, helped them win the game line. She got two tries in there. And then her other front row partner, And Pyres also got another two tries, and she scored one against Ireland last week. And stick Kelsey Jones in the middle there, the hooker for Wales, who plays her rugby with Niamh Jones over in Gloucester, and actually keeps Niamh Jones out of the number two shirt. Like, and that's a phenomenal front row that Wales have, and they've just this massive blend of youth and experience. They had Shunnet Harries at 8 playing phenomenally well. Ellie Slosull at 10 was kicking over penalties just to keep it going, and then they had a huge impact with Fionn Lewis off the bench, who replaced Ciara Bevan, who made her 50th cap. You know, and to have that mix of 19-year-old props and then girls have been around years and winning their 50th cap, and then to have a big impact off the bench. You know, Wales look a really formidable team this year, and I'm really looking forward to their next game against England. It should be a real eye-opener and see where they're really at.
And speaking of England, we knew it was going to be a big scoreline against Italy. The final score coming in at 68-5. What did you make of that match? Was it just another example, I suppose, of how good this English team are?
Yeah, look, this English team are one of the best teams, you know, we'll have seen in recent years. And the biggest thing about it is that England have a massive amount of players unavailable at the moment. You know, their back three are phenomenal. Clodagh MacDonald, you know, can play nine or wing, and she's absolutely tearing it up. She got two tries of the weekend. You look at, on the other wing, Abby Dale scored 4 tries, you know, and she's just a phenomenal electric player. She can do the simple finishes. She could score from her own try line. She can break tackles, and she just seems to have it all. And like, you think of England have the likes of Ellie Kildon unavailable through injury. She'll hopefully be back soon. Then they also have Helena Rowland, you know, Zoe Harrison, both 10s gone, and they've Holly Atchison able to step up there at 10. Scarrett is missing, their talisman, their go-to player hasn't been around, and they just look unfazed. They have players who are stepping in at every position regardless of who's unavailable, and it seems like nothing has changed. They're a well-oiled machine. Every single player knows their role. Every single player has pure quality, and that comes off the back of playing in a very, very good league in the AP15s in England. And even what we've seen, all the good stuff from France, England look to me like they're going to run away with it.
And you mentioned there Abby Dow getting 4 tries. It's not unusual for that English team to, you know, rack up tries to a hat trick. For how do other teams get up to that standard? Is it a matter of they've come through, you know, playing that higher standard of rugby? How do other teams even begin to compete?
Yeah, look, it's a bit of both. Speaking of hat-tricks, look, I didn't even mention Jess Breach there, and she got a hat-trick at the weekend, and that just goes to show, like, the absolute incredible depth that they have, and it's phenomenal to see. But I suppose you have to look at it from a bigger picture, that England have been professional for probably over 6 years now, you know, and they're way ahead of every other team in terms of their professionalism, what they've been doing. They also have, out of the Six Nations, the biggest playing number and the biggest player pool to pull from. So, you know, that is going to have a massive figure. The Irish playing pool is just not as deep, and that's what we are seeing with that. Add to that then, yeah, the AP15, the English Premier League, is the best league in Europe at the minute, and you actually have players from Wales, Ireland, Scotland, France, even, you know, the USA, Canada, Australia coming over to play in that English league. So basically every club team that's playing in there is basically made up of internationals almost from 1 to 15. And that's going to improve the quality incredibly. So there's a number of things, but also the RFU have backed them for a number of years and have given them funding and support to be able to actually improve and focus on that. And it's what's led to their rise over the last number of years, and they've been purely dominant, and it's great to see. And hopefully we'll start to see that the RFU starts to back this Irish team, that they can improve the pathways you know, for young girls starting out in rugby, and then also for our domestic leagues and interpros, and that can in a few years lead to us being a much better national team.
Before we head into the final part of our show, we're going to be doing our segment Break It Down, where Hannah explains rugby terminology in 60 seconds. Hannah, this week we're going to be talking about the gain line.
Okay, so the gain line is basically whatever team is going forward, you know, and the other team then obviously is going backwards. So for example, if you have a tackle and a ruck and an offside line is formed, if, say, a forward gets the ball and is running, if they get tackled further ahead of the previous ruck, they have won the gain line or the advantage, and so therefore they've put the defence on the back foot. If the opposite happens, where someone comes up and makes a big tackle and forces the the attacking player backwards, then the defending team have won the gain line. And the gain line could be really important. And because if an attacking team is winning the gain line, they're pushing that defence backwards, they're getting them scrambling a little bit more, and it means that you're going to get really good quick ball, and an opportunity is going to come around for you to score or move the ball and kind of get that team going. If the defence is winning the gain line all the time, it's pushing the attack backwards, making them scramble a little bit more, and you know, it obviously ends up in them in a poor position, and they end up having to either turn over the ball or, you know, kick it out to relieve pressure.
Just over 60 seconds.
Woo!
I think that'll be allowed. So looking ahead now, we have a week off to prepare for the next round of matches. The first one I want to talk about, Wales versus England. You mentioned it's going to be an interesting one. What do you think we can expect to see from it?
Yeah, look, I think this is going to be a really good test and measure for Wales and see where they're really at. You know, we spoke about before that, you know, France and England are two teams that are just, you know, a step ahead of the rest, and Wales are really trying to bridge that gap. And from what we've seen so far, they're the team that, you know, is the most able to, you know, bridge that gap a little bit. I think England will still be far too strong, but, you know, Wales will give it a really good go. As I mentioned, they have some fantastic players, really good experienced players there, and then blending that mix of youth in that. It'll be really interesting to see how their set piece goes, because that's where they've dominated so far against Scotland and Ireland. And as I mentioned, that front row are, you know, absolutely incredible from what we've seen so far. So this will be a really good measure for them. Do I think England will win? Yes, I think they have far too much of them, particularly their own bench impact. And the week off might allow some of their injuries to return. But yeah, that'll be the game of the weekend, I think, so far.
And if you had to put a scoreline on it, what would you say?
I think it'll be a lot tighter than England, you know, so far. They put 11 and 10 tries on previous opposition. I still think there'll be about 20 points in it, but probably something around, you know, 40-18 to England.
And the next game then, France and Scotland. We saw what France were capable of doing in Cork. Scotland, you'd imagine, would be that bit stronger maybe than Ireland. What can we expect to see there?
Yeah, look, I spoke about France and how they tend to have slow starts in tournament. They seem fully up to speed now against Ireland, you know, and that week off will only give them more time to gel together and get even better. And I can see them really rolling through this tournament, you know, causing a lot of chaos and damage. And Scotland might be in for a really tough weekend. And they're just too strong. They had players like Jessie Tremoulier, former World Player of the Year, on the bench. And, you know, Gael Hermé, former French captain. To bring players like them off the bench is absolutely incredible. Scotland missing a couple of players to GB sevens. Will they be back or not for that game? I'm not sure. Big boost if they are, but they're going to really struggle with the physicality and the dominance of the French. And yeah, it'll be an easy French win for me.
And if you had to put a scoreline on it, what would you say?
Could get nasty. Could be 45-10 or so to Scotland, or to France.
To France. And then the big match for us, I suppose, Italy and Ireland. Do you think we have a chance against Italy compared to France? We would have said, you know, they're a big team, big contenders in the Six Nations. How are we going to cope against Italy?
Yeah, look, absolutely we have a chance. I don't want to write this team off. We have some really good players in there. It's just that, you know, we've a lot of inexperienced players who maybe not used to competing at international level, and that takes time. And there's a lot of learnings. The game's played an awful lot quicker. This Italian team, however, have been improving in recent years, and they have some fantastic players, the likes of Rigoni, that plays at 12. She's really their kind of bread and butter. You know, and they can be a dangerous team. They've a highly experienced player in Baratini, almost 100 caps for Italy at 9. Young new player, a fullback, Manuzzi, I really, really like. But their biggest addition so far has been Franco, Giada Franco in the back row. She's been injured for all of last year, and getting her back in, she's a big physical player, and she'll try to dominate that Irish pack. And for me, Ireland have a chance in this game, absolutely no doubt. We haven't travelled too well in recent years with away games, and we haven't had a lot of victories, but this Italy team are massively inconsistent. We saw them put up a really good performance against the French, and then they utterly crumbled against England last weekend, and Ireland will be hoping to put them under a lot of pressure so that they can't play the rugby they want to. Big thing that Italy like to do is that they like to run it out of their defence a lot of the times, which is high risk. And if we can put them under pressure, we can force turnovers and get the ball in really good attacking opportunities for us and get some kind of easy scores on that. So our defence has to be really good. Our first up tackles have to be really good. We missed 45 tackles against France, you know, and they punished us for that. So we need to do that. We need to flip the tables, make our defence really good, and force Italy into mistakes. And Do I think we can win? Yes, absolutely. The team is good enough. But we just have to make sure that we don't give Italy an opportunity to show the skills and play the way they're capable of.
And we've seen two very different team sheets for round one and round two. Starting with the back line, I suppose, who would you like to see Greg McWilliams named there?
Look, I think we're a little bit limited at the minute, particularly in our back line. A couple of injuries have kind of swayed us into this. I'm not sure if he'll make too many changes. You know, he might make one or two in the back three. I thought Maeve Dealey had quite a difficult day last weekend. But look, fullback can be a quite a hard place to play when there is a team that are absolutely dominating you. But I suppose Lauren Delaney, I thought, had a really good impact when she came in, and she can be a natural fullback with some really good speed and attacking options. So that could potentially be one. The week off will give some players an opportunity who maybe had knocks or injuries to kind of overcome them. So we might see again some reshuffles in the back line, but I wouldn't be expecting massive changes.
And would you imagine the same for the pack? Pretty much unchanged?
Yeah, pretty much unchanged, you know, depending on a couple of injuries. Maeve O'Leary might get another shot to come back in. I didn't think she did anything wrong. I think the whole team just kind of misfired in round one against Wales. So she'll be hoping that this weekend's, training camp that they have, that she can put her hand up there. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was no changes.
And what would you put as the scoreline then for this weekend?
This is a really difficult one, to be honest. You know, these two teams, again, have a lot of quality in them, but can be very inconsistent in how they play. My heart says an Ireland win, but my head says Italy. I can't put a scoreline on that. And I really hope I'm wrong. I'm not perfect. I'm human. I can't get things wrong. But I would love to see an Irish win for these girls and to kind of show that the hard work they're going. But I think this Italy team might be a little bit too strong.
And we saw, obviously, and we discussed Nicola Friday being emotional. You mentioned there, we obviously have this week off, they're in camp. What do you think the mood is as a player who would have played in the Six Nations yourself? What's the mood in camp now?
Look, I'm sure it's very somber, like, and they're difficult days to get over. But I think, you know, the beauty of sport and the beauty of Six Nations is that games come around really quickly and those players be relishing the opportunity to get back on the pitch and right a couple of wrongs and, you know, try and improve their physicality and their intensity and bring that for 80 minutes. Nicola mentioned how they maybe did it in spurts against France but didn't do it for the whole game and lapsed in focus. That'll be stuff they're trying to improve on. You know, they might have been fairly upset about it and this, that and the other, but there's opportunities there to go out and prove everybody wrong and show them what good rugby players they are. And I just think that while the France match was a disappointment in terms of the result, looking at positives from it, it's giving these young, inexperienced players match minutes and opportunities to show, you know, what they can do and take learnings from that. And as long as we're taking learnings from that and bringing them to the next game, then, you know, that can only be a positive.
And we'll leave it there then for today. So thank you for watching, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks' time for the recap of round 3 of the Six Nations.